This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to be here with Rahul. And I just learned that we are both in Austin, Texas. That is great. So we definitely should grab coffee or drink together soon. Rahul, welcome to SaaS Scaled. And if you could, please tell us a little bit about yourself and your company.
Well, first off, Armon, thanks for inviting me on the podcast. Like, excited to be here. And before I talk about Rapid Canvas, I think one thing I wanted to mention is sort of my interest in what we do at Rapid Canvas around AI, data science, and data. Good part of last 15 years, I've been sort of on a long journey. It started at Google, where I was managing trust and safety teams, and the idea was, how do you provide operational teams the ability to use machine learning and data science without them being data scientists or writing code, right? And I spent 7 years there, very successful at solving that problem. Then had a startup called Simility, which took that into the financial services world, and we are a market leader and was acquired by PayPal. And then same idea of like democratizing machine learning at PayPal. Now I started Rapid Canvas. And in that journey, what I've seen, there is no one point in time, unlike the sort of, you know, evolution of generative AI, that is a breakthrough moment for the whole AI journey, right? And that prompted me to say, hey, like the things that have always been blocking us from doing, enabling business users and enabling operations teams, most of those, the answer is using generative AI in the right context. And that led to Rapid Canvas. Interesting journey. And so far, it's been super exciting. So happy to talk more about it.
Fantastic. So something that I read either on your website or the writing that I received from you told me something that was very interesting. Because for many years, as you put it, That was my understanding. For many years, software was a tool that was essentially on one right of the equation and humans sitting on the other right side of the equation and using the tool to do something that maybe human is not as good as the tool, like calculation, like loops, like, you know, checking something very repeatedly with no problem, with no error, everything. So it's like computation, automation. Those kind of things, like computer does the accounting, run the payroll, right? And I do these repetitive jobs. And then on my side, I make the decision on, you know, who should receive a raise in the payroll or in the accounting, you know, how should I really make a decision on this investment versus the other investment? Now, you are talking about agents, right? And then it's not about really perfecting the tools or the automation that computer is doing. Is more about bringing now software and AI and technology and machine to the other side of the equation, right? And then in this part, then tools are there. Software is there and AI is not really competing with that side. AI is competing now, or helping, I would say, the other side of the equation, that I can now help you on the other side as well. And that's how you see these agents coming and actually trying to, you know, do what human used to do.
Correct.
Anything you wanted to comment on this? Maybe my take is super accurate or not accurate, or maybe you should, you know, comment on it.
So I will, you know, since we are on the SaaS scale podcast, right?
Yeah.
Traditionally, the last 20 years have been about software as a service.
Yeah.
We're going to see a paradigm shift to service as a software, right? So it's not that the software is a productivity enhancer or a workflow automation tool. It is software can be a autonomous agent that can deliver a product of work and deliver on outcomes. And I will take a simple example because these are terms people throw around and, you know, agents can do everything and, you know, all of that, right? But let's say I have like a simple spreadsheet, right? And I have weekly sales data in the spreadsheet. Now I want to compare month over month sales of two different products, right? Now, if I'm going to manually automate it, now I have to take the weekly data, aggregate it to monthly, then sort of create monthly trends and compare it, then compare the difference, and so on and so forth. LLMs and generative AI is smart enough where I just say, I just give that file, and I say, I'm trying to look for month over month trends and which month is the highest deviation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the agent, I don't have to pre-train it in how to do the aggregation and then comparison and then find a difference and find the biggest difference. Like, it understands all this context. It is without me telling it what to do, right? So that is the autonomous. When you say autonomous, people think it's like a sentinel going off and doing this. No, it is the autonomous part is like commonly understood best practices, calculations. It already knows. You don't have to tell the agent, oh, this is what you should do as a step-by-step-by-step process.
Mm-hmm.
To get from point A to point B. And secondly, now as you see more and more reasoning become front and center in agents, the agents actually explain to you, here is what I'm thinking. So you know, oh yeah, I have transparency into the thinking of this agent. It's not just some black box where, and we call it reliable generative AI, which is like, hey, do you have a complete transparency into why, what the agent is doing, and you feel comfortable with it? Because I think people get the importance of agents and generative AI, but it's like, can you trust it? And do you know exactly what it's doing, right? That's the important parts. But to your point, that's where we are now. So the agent is, in essence, doing that product of work autonomously, right? Versus you now having to tell it, predefine for it, what are the steps it needs to do. Right. And that's a big change in thinking of, software as a service versus, you know, service as a software. Right. It's a big shift, I think. And it will be the trend of the next decade. Right. That will dominate how software is delivered and what you expect it to do.
And what are the use cases that from your perspective are probably the low-hanging fruit in the market that you see people can get the most value sooner rather than wait for years to come to fruition?
Correct. And, like everything, this is a baby right now, right? And so it has to grow. And in terms of the business jargon, it's crawl, walk, run. Mm-hmm. So right now we're sort of in the crawl space, right? We're sort of figuring out our way around this. What we focus on at Rapid Canvas is around the world of data.
Right.
And our thesis is quite straightforward in that sense. There is roughly about 750 million to a billion Excel users, and roughly about 80 to 100 million power users who can do pivots and macros and complex sort of functions. And what's been the barrier for those users to break through and go to the next level of modeling and so on is you have to write code, right? You have to know Python. to go from Excel to the next level. And what agents do that we specifically build is they allow you to converse with your data and build these kind of capabilities that then do all the computations on your behalf. So you don't have to write code. That code is auto-generated and your natural language is translated into code. So the limits of, if you can think about it, if you can express it, if you can modularize it, your design, it can be executed, right? That's what it comes down to. And so to your point, like, start with very simple use cases, like the one I mentioned, like finding trends in data. Previously, you had to do it in Excel or creating this chart, right? Now you can do it with generative AI. So a lot of tasks that you would either need data analysts or somebody like a data engineer to write code to do, you no longer have to worry about that, right? You can do that by simply asking the questions. And if the AI is transparent, then you trust the answer, because a lot of people have this issue with hallucinations and so on and so forth. So if you know the reasoning and the thought process, you can trust it. So another simple use case I will take, we have a client who's a real estate fund. And they basically buy properties, clean them up, and then rent them out. And they do that by the thousands. Now imagine for, you know, tens of thousands of properties, you have like hundreds of property management companies. And those property management companies submit invoices and financial statements to get paid and so on and so forth. Now, this company, which is the fund, has to put all of this data in the same format, right? Like somebody might call rent as rental income, somebody might call it income, but all those data need to be kind of translated in the same language. Now, historically, you would have people sort of reading this and sort of changing the text and making it happen, right? Now we have agents that can just say, hey, like, this is the end state, and here is the starting state. And my expectation is that you can map the starting state to this end state, and it just goes and does that mapping automatically, right? These are very straightforward problems that require a lot of human manual intervention. And basically, this is work nobody wants to do, right? You don't want to be the guy trying to change this text field in every spreadsheet, right? But unfortunately, somebody has to do it. Those things can now be done by agents, right? So we're in the crawl phase where some of these manual work, repeated manual work or automation that used to be done with things like robotic process automation can now be done by agents without, you know, pre-coding or sort of pre-configuring things, right? That's where we are in this phase. And, you know, eventually we'll see evolution and specialization. But even this is a huge leap, right? Imagine the productivity it can unleash with people who work with data every day.
So I have two questions for you. One of them is a serious question. One of them is a more fun question. So the serious question is more about really reliable generative AI that you mentioned it a couple of times. I just wanted to make sure that I'm capturing, you know, your thoughts on it, if there's any other comment you wanted to add. Because when you say reliable generative AI, how to make generative AI more reliable? And if you can expand upon that, and then we get to the one that is a little bit more fun.
Yeah. I think fundamentally the way we think about reliable is two aspects, right? One is, does the AI understand your business context? So for example, a traditional generative AI, like an LLM that is not grounded or tuned to a specific business, there is a business in which the definition of system is different than the definition of infrastructure, for example. They have some internal definition for it. What LLMs do is, because they're just reading the internet and figuring out associations, they tend to associate those words together. So you may ask a question about infrastructure, it may give you an answer that is system, because it's sort of synonymous, right? Now, you need to make sure that when you use it in the enterprise context, you're giving a lot of information, and you don't have to like type in information in the agents. You just have to say, hey, here are my training manuals, here's my data schema and all of that. So the agents are able to understand your business context. And when they answer a question about system versus infrastructure, they know it's different. Although when they read the internet, it was the same. In your business, it's different, right? So that's the first thing when it comes to reliable, is it understands your business language, your business terms, your business practices to the extent possible. If you can see that information, that helps. Second is why something is happening is very important for us to know. That changes the dynamic from something being black box. So like I might just ask an LLM, hey, this is, you know, just run this calculation for me and come up with an answer. It comes up with an answer. Now, how do I know it ran the right steps? And it may have assumed something and it ran a different set of steps and came up with an answer. Now I have to like double check that answer. Mm-hmm. But if that reasoning is very clearly explained, like, you know, here is was step one, here is step two, here is step three, here is step four. Now I know what the thinking behind that logic is and the why the answer is what it is. Mm-hmm. So those two things, I think, give a tremendous amount of confidence to the end user that, hey, the agent understands my language, my business. And by the way, I know what it is doing. Right. And that to me is at least the starting point of something you can rely on. Of course, there is a lot more work to be done, but that's at least to me like the baseline of what reliable generative AI is.
Now, excuse me. We can go to indeed.com today and say, I need a Python developer, or I need someone, a business analyst that knows how to work with Excel very well or spreadsheets and everything. How far we are from the point that you actually go and to indeed.com and there is a section that says these are really the AI guys, meaning that you are really hiring the AI agent who's really expert in business analyst kind of role. And, you know, so you can really go there and hire that person and hire the other AI agent that is actually a good Python guy. And how far we are from there to really go and see it in real life? You recruit these agents and they come in and just do the job that you have.
Yeah, so I have a kind of like a fun answer to that and a little more sort of thoughtful. The fun answer is like I was having drinks with someone who's a head of IT at one of the insurance companies. And he's like, in a few years, I'm going to be the head of HR. I'm like, what does that mean? He's like, if all the workforce is digital, I am HR. You know, and I'm like, you know, people are already thinking along those lines that hey, I become HR in this context, right? I think what I've seen thus far is the agents are good at sort of precision, automation, repetitive tasks, and so on. But they are kind of the understanding that they have is based on, you know, what they have learned, you know, through all the training data and so on and so forth. So when it comes to creativity, ingenuity, intuition, nuances and interpretation, I don't see a time, at least in the near future, with the technology that I see, that will ever go away. I think it's always going to be a combination of the two. That's kind of going to be the best bet. I think that's at least in the next, 3 to 5 years, I still see that combination is going to beat a pure agent combination all day long. So I'm betting on that combination.
That's good insight. Thank you. And then, you hear a lot of interesting stories around, you know, Gen AI and AI. And I'm pretty sure in the position you have and the company being so at the center of these kind of activities nowadays, you have heard some of those as well. Is there any particular interesting story you would like to share with us that you would say, you know, talking about the experience that people have, talking about the experience that Gen AI has created, the changes that it has brought to the society, to life, to people, to work, to jobs. I think this story is very interesting. I would like to share with you if you have any. Otherwise, tell me, we'll take this clip, this part of the video out of the interview. But I'm just kidding. But if you have a good story to share, that would be great.
Yeah, I think, one story I wanted to share. So we have a client, MT Thompson. They're an automotive afterpart manufacturer, and they're based out of Brazil. And like everybody else we talk to, because we talk to a lot of folks in traditional industry, right? Manufacturing, retail, energy, construction. And it's the first step is always, hey, like, I understand AI is here and I need to kind of use it in my business. And here are a few areas where I think it will make a difference. But almost always the discussion starts with, yes, I want to do AI. Here are a few thoughts I have. I don't know which one is science fiction and which one is for real, right? And so our goal is to help put this in practice, right? And now it's been sort of a year and a half since we've been working with them. And where we help them is they have a very complicated supply chain. They're ordering parts from China, Germany, US, all over the place, different lead times. And so are their customers global, right? Now, being able to forecast the demand from your customers and being able to maximize the inventory to match that demand is a very complicated problem. And they used to like, I think there was a lot of confidence in the human gut that went into it, right? And sort of we have them now completely moved to an AI-based setup. It's still the human kind of views all the outcomes that we provide for prediction of demand and inventory optimization. But the flip of the switch of saying everything has to be manually entered into my ERP to I'm going to do one click, everything will be automatically entered unless I want to intervene manually. Mm-hmm. I think that switch is important, which means now you trust what you have in terms of AI enough to say you run with it and I will only be an exception handler rather than I will check every single one because I don't trust you, right? So I think that to me, that's the story of, and still the human is involved in the whole process of like making sure all this works fine. But that's the story of like how AI can make that shift for people, like, you know, just going from not everything has to be human validated, trusted, all of it to yes, I trust these decisions. And I only intervene when needed.
Talking about SaaS, many of these SaaS companies providing software as a service to their customers and users, they started thinking about adding more AI-powered capabilities to their product because they thought that this is something that in the future it's happening and we need to get, you know, some benefits and do more automations out of it and help our users better. And then they started thinking about how to first create a proof of concept and then I go to production. Some of them have been faster, some of them have been slower. From users' perspective, however, the expectation has changed. And that is the driver, because if their users expect to see those capabilities, they need to deliver. If the users yet do not have that expectation, then that's harder to sell and maybe generate some revenue out of it. So justify to, you know, put the investment and the effort to make it happen. Now, the user's expectation, however, is changing, right? So if you look at every 6 months, if you look at every, you know, how it's changing, the way we have observed on our site is users now expect to see more and more of these AI-related capabilities in their hand, not just behind the scene, but in a self-service manner that they can actually adjust it, design it, prompt it, take the, you know, train the agent, maybe work with the agent in a more self-service manner. How do you see that expectation from your perspective on the user's side is changing and how rapidly it is changing?
Yeah, I think from a SaaS standpoint, I would say there has to be an evolution of the user experience, right? If I look at any SaaS product I use, I think compared to the number of features and capabilities available to me, probably use like 10% or less of, you know, what is available, unless I'm a power user. And that's a very small segment. And the two things you will do with any SaaS product is either you're trying to do some workflow, you know, automate some things or, you know, poke around and change some things or set some events or alerts, right? So there's a workflow element and there is a data element with dashboards. Mm-hmm. Now, I've seen products which will have 56 dashboards under, you know, 12 sub-menus. Now imagine now the expectation of the user is like, why am I trying to figure out which dashboard and sub-menu and click through and I go in and I see my chart? Why can't I just say, oh, I need to know right now how many units are in stock?
Mm-hmm.
Boom, the chart comes up. Why am I navigating through these menus, sub-menus, and now I have to remember where the chart is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I just generate, and then that chart is month over month, but now I need quarter over quarter. Like, now what do I do? So why can't I just state in English the chart I want, and it just generates it, right? So that's one expectation I think the users are having. And the second one is the same one with the workflow. Like, okay, if I'm trying to automate something or set an alert, why do I have to go into a menu and like find a button where I set an alert, then I set an alert and give the config options and then say commit or save? Why can't I just say, I need to set an alert on this workflow to do the blah, 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 right? The expectation has changed similar to, you know, I remember I was a part of the BlackBerry world, right? You're typing everything in this BlackBerry. I'm never going to go with my BlackBerry, no matter what the iPhone is. But like the natural interface is touch. Yeah. Similarly, the natural way to engage with information, automation, data is language, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's a fundamental shift. And because the users are seeing that shift in the consumer space, right, with, you know, OpenAI and Perplexity, in their everyday life, they're using this. They expect the same kind of ease of use in their enterprise world, right, in terms of language being the way to engage with the data and the workflows, rather than you having to figure out menus and sub-menus and config options, right? So I think that will be a big shift. And I don't see that, I think that's like table stakes. You have to have that, right? Now, what else a particular SaaS product can have, that may be dependent on the domain that you're in and the kind of users that you have and the sophistication of those users. But the table stakes is these two things have to be language centric rather than menu and configuration and sub-menu and all of that, right? And I think that's an expectation, at least I have as a SaaS user, and I'm sure others do too, who use tons of SaaS tools.
Yeah, absolutely true. No, that's a very good point. I don't recall who that person was, but someone who was very good and definitely an expert in AI domain and Gen AI domain told me once that when I realized how much improvements and how much progress we are making in Gen AI, and he was very on the front end, right? So he knew all of these developments every week, every day, so fast being developed, everything. And he thought that, you know, it's going to change the world in 5 weeks, you know, 10 weeks, based on what I see. We are going to live in a totally different world in 6 months. And then he told me that didn't happen. Not because those improvements did not come to market. They actually did better than I expected. And we could incorporate more, you know, parameters into our formula and our technology. And actually the Gen AI engine was working better than I expected. And the reasoning was more advanced, not because those did not deliver the result, but because then I realized that there are so much other things that need to be done in order for the society to really change the way they do things. And then it kind of brought me to a different kind of understanding of the reality that changes do not happen at the same speed I thought as a technologist that it will happen just because the technology exists. What's your take on it, and what does make us slower as a society to really adapt or adopt these new technologies, including Gen AI and everything? That the technology might be there, but people may not just grab it as soon as it's there. They take their time, and you know, they go through their steps, and it takes some time in order for us to really, you know, reflect upon those improvements.
Yeah. I mean, my thinking on this is, one is, I think it's just human behavior that we are used to doing something, it's working for us. Why try to fix something that ain't broken, right? And some of this kind of slowly gets immersed in our day-to-day, right? So for example, there are times I will use Google for doing search, there are times I'll use Perplexity. And over time, you know, as I see, you know, the results in both, you know, maybe my leaning towards one versus the other will go away. But like my muscle memory is use Google. And so I will automatically say google.com and start typing, right? So some of that is just how human behavior is. But I would also say the rate of change over decades has sort of really sped up, right? Like when a technology changes, right, whether it like from like microcomputers, like laptops to phones, you know, you can see the next thing, the adoption is, the curve is much faster, right? The distribution mechanisms are easier because of social awareness is very easy. So, you know, ChatGPT is still one of the fastest adopted technology, right? It's still not like overnight of switch flips. But the velocity of how people adopt things and the distribution mechanism is online. So everybody can just type the URL and start using it. There's no barrier to starting to use it, right? So in that sense, it is as easy as it has ever been to change. But at the same time, we are all humans, right? We take our own sweet time to sort of get accustomed to this. And now when you're selling into an enterprise, you add that complexity of, oh, it's not one human that has to change. It's an organization, which is a collection mm-hmm. of humans. And there are vested interests in status quo. There are vested interests in changing. And so all of this has to come together. So that's just human nature. But I think the rate of change is faster than we've ever seen before. But it's not going to be like weeks. It'll still be months, probably years. But if it took 10 years before for the mind shift to change, now it will take like 1 year, but it's not going to be like 2 weeks.
Yeah, good point. So it's accelerating and it's going to be faster and faster, as we have seen even in during our time, during last 10, 20 years, it was faster for people to really adopt to the situation compared to 60 years ago that we read about it. And probably that was faster than 200 years ago when people really saw the changes. So changes are accelerating. People are trying to kind of, you know, adapt those adapt to the situation and faster. But still there are some physical limitations and the way psychologically, you know, we have been programmed and everything. Now I'm going to ask you the last question that is about some maybe or one book that you may say, this is really the book I would like to share with the audience, and it has been impactful in what I do, and personally or professionally.
Yeah, so I like the book PayPal Wars. And, you know, as a startup founder, you know, working in the startup ecosystem, it's like an invaluable book to read. I think a few reasons why. It's one of those stories which you had to fight all odds for the company to get to the next step and the next step and the next step. And eventually they exited by selling to eBay, and then they spun off as an independent company again as PayPal. So multiple different evolutions. But just the nature of how hard it is to build a company. And we're not talking like average founders. Like this is like Peter Thiel and Max Levchin and Elon Musk and like the who's who all combined, like all-star team.
Yeah.
Despite that, it was such a hard time, right? So I think that part is important because sometimes people forget, no matter how talented, how good you are, this is not an easy job, right? Number one. Number two, I like that whenever the author is one of the team members, it comes from an insider's perspective who's seen the battles every day. Because when we tell history, we always say the good parts, right? So if I'm going to sit down with an author and say, like, why did I do this and that? It's all like my vision or like my perspective of how things went. It's all going to be very generous towards me, right? But versus you're in it, you're actually documenting your day to day and like, okay, this is what happened. This is why it happened. Again, it's going to be your view, but it's from an insider's perspective rather than a retelling of the story at a later point to somebody else who then writes about it, right? So, and of course, the personalities involved, right? The PayPal mafia, very well known, you know, they've all gone things. I would say it's a must read for anybody in the startup ecosystem.
Fantastic. Good suggestion. Thank you very much, Raul. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and I personally enjoyed the conversation, and I hope others do as well.
Thanks, Arman, and let's have that coffee in Austin sometime.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Arman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.